Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I want to say that I really believe that you, my audience, are very intelligent. As a matter of fact, I think you're super intelligent because you're listening to my show. So, of course, I'm going to think that way about you. But I want to ask you, do you communicate intelligently? How's your intelligence for that? Well, maybe we can all learn to do that better. So, to help us do that, I'm going to speak to the author of a book called Conversational Intelligence. I loved this book. It really helps me understand how to communicate better, even to you and to all the people in my life, and understand how people are communicating better with each other or not. And to help us do this better is the author of Conversational Intelligence, Judith Glaser. Judith, welcome to Energy Stew.
Oh, Peter, I'm so thrilled to be here. And by the way, I love the name of your show.
Oh, thank you. I hear that from a lot of people. I'm very proud of it.
It's very unique. And interestingly enough, it's really the heart of the conversation we're going to have today.
Well, there is a stew that we all get involved in. And I want to start off with what we aren't understanding about conversation. You know, what is it that we haven't grown into yet? So many of us think we know how to converse, and yet we're conversing from our own observation, from our own sense of self, from our own point of view about who we're conversing with.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go real wrong that way, right?
Yeah, we really can. For some reason, there are some beliefs that we hold about conversations and about, and I'll even go a little step further and bump it up to some beliefs we have about reality. And maybe you can help me weave these together for our listeners as well. We've been taught that we live in the same reality. There's this physical reality around us. And so when we're talking to each other about the things in our lives, the things we see, and the things we do together, we assume that we have the same reality. And so from that assumption, when I use certain words, I'm assuming that you know what they mean and that they mean the same thing to you as they do to me. And so something as simple as thinking about a report that we're working on together if we're partners. And, you know, I'm imagining that what you put in the report and what I've read and what I think about it is very similar to what's in your head. And so we act as though we share that reality. And once we do that, we stop realizing that there are often reality gaps that we have that are what cause the conflict in our relationship at times. I'm thinking one thing, you're thinking something completely different. And maybe this seems obvious to a lot of people who are enlightened and listen to your show, but it's one of those premises that I wanted to get on the table just to get a start in this conversation.
And one thing you say in the book is that we don't pay attention consistently. We tune out every some odd seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we think somebody is listening to us. And my wife and I have this argument a lot about, I thought you heard me. And you've met my wife through Jan Goldstuff. And so so she's intelligent. And so we're learning how to be better communicators with each other and understand that we do tune out. And we, you know, it's normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's every 12 to 18 seconds, human beings drop out of the conversation, go in their head, try to find some comparable to explain what they're hearing, because each word is packed with content that we have to unpack in our head to make sense of it. And when we do that, we've now stepped out of the conversation. We've now added, now we know from neuroscience that once we start to think about the words that we're hearing, we add new meaning to them, new content. Then we come back into the conversation.
Now, we're talking about people who we feel agreeability with. You know, we can be speaking with someone who's totally excited about speaking with us, and yet we're not communicating correctly because we're not understanding that their reality isn't the same thing as our reality.
Exactly. And you mentioned something before, we tell somebody things. You know, we talk, we express our points of view, and someone doesn't get it. And we start to pick up signals. Not everybody picks up the signals, Peter. You know, when we're sending these signals that we don't get it, it could be everything from a look on our face to kind of pauses that we have, trying to digest what they're saying. And so usually our knee-jerk reaction when somebody doesn't seem to get it, and we do pick up the signals, is, well, we say it again, like you said with your wife, you know, we... Let me just say that again. I told you once. Sometimes we get into that. I told you once. I told you twice. And how come you don't get it? And that then begins to create an energy around that relationship that has some negativity to it or has some judgment to it.
Right.
And we associate that with this person because our brain. This is what I find so fascinating about our brains. For every human being we meet, we have a spot in our brain that is now defined with that name of that person. And every time we meet that person again, we add more content, more data, more things about that person. And that's just how our brain works. Animals have done that forever. We have the animal brain underneath our, quote, human brain. And so we still do that all the time.
And we could be putting them into a very narrow slot.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. And people feel that, you know, that people feel when they are restricted or when they're given a small place in our life. You know, some people... we love and we give a big space, and then we give them the freedom to make mistakes. We give them the freedom to show up and not be perfect. That's giving people the space to be themselves. But I love the way you describe that. We give people a narrow space to be in, and human beings feel that restriction. I can't do this. I can't do that.
Oh, you're just a good communicator to say that.
No, but I mean, what you gave me was this is how, when it's working really nicely, you just gave me a beautiful visual. I happened to be sitting in a hotel room for our interview, and there's wallpaper, and the wallpaper has vines that go up straight. And as you were talking, I was seeing the vines, and then the narrow space came up, and that gave me a beautiful picture that between the combination of what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing in my eyes, I now have an image that I will connect with you as a kind of a gift that you gave me for how to think about another way to think about relationships and why they work and why they don't work.
Right, and how you might be squeezing some people in between the vines.
Exactly, exactly. It's a great visual. I think I'm going to use that in my, my next book.
Oh, good. But one of the things that you were talking about, and it's really important, are not just the words that we use and the mindset that we come from, but the way that it really provokes limiting responses in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of myself as aware and trying to listen. You know, I've done a radio show for so many years that I want to be listening to my guests and responding. And one of the good things about being on the radio, most of the people call in, they don't get to see my face because I have a very expressive face and it gives me away all the time. And sometimes it gets me into a lot of trouble. And you know, people and my wife say, don't look that way because people are going to pick it up and they're going to understand that you're not appreciating them or that, you know, that you have some attitude. And it's like, what? I don't know how to hold my face any differently.
I don't know how to hold it back.
Yeah, right. So I guess the idea is to be smart about it all, to see that we are doing this. So if I know that that's what I'm doing, then all of a sudden I can feel more that I should be more honest about what I'm projecting.
Exactly. I think this is one of the ahas, like we started out talking about what's different about conversational intelligence. And I think what human beings need to learn is that our body is set up to register signals from each other at such a rapid speed, and by rapid I mean like 0.07 seconds, you are picking up something about me and I'm picking up something about you. And human beings filter or sort for friend or foe as one of the most primary animalistic instincts, because that's what our bodies have been trained over billions of years to do. And we've forgotten that because we're into words and we're into information and communicating words and data, when in fact, at the same time and faster, these signals are going back and forth like the ones you're saying. You show it on your face, people pick it up, and then we start to form opinions about whether we can trust someone or not. And what's new about conversational intelligence is that our bodies are designed for trust, distrust at a faster speed than they are for information. And so even if I want to hide it, somehow, once we get within 10 feet of another person, we're reading those signals at a very low level. And while we may not be able to, maybe it takes us 10 seconds to put words to what we're feeling, we are making those feelings, and those feelings are faster.
And some people are better at that than others.
Yeah, yeah. Some people are better at that. What would better look like, actually? You know, when we get better at this, what are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing that we can think on our feet better about others, mm-hmm. and prepare mm-hmm. for the way they might respond to us, or what their hidden agendas might be. We get a feeling for that, and I'm a professional intuitive, and yet I'm not really good at being with people who are doing a sales job on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really too innocent. I'm much too open and willing to accept people's expression and sincere expression. And yet, how many times have we been sabotaged by someone else's sincerity?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my sons, who's a lawyer, always tells me, "Dad, anytime you're going to sign about anything, buy anything, whatever, call me first, because I'll figure out how you might be getting duped." And
that's cute. Well, I want to ask you something then, because there's something also about human beings, and maybe this is a piece of what you're referring to, is that some of us are positive thinkers, and also some of us move towards giving positive halos to people. Because there is a rule of thumb, which is if you extend an olive branch to another person, that often that helps create a positive return, that there's a tit for tat in human beings, and if you extend something positive, you get back positive.
That fits.
Yeah.
I really feel that way. I really want to love everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so not everybody wants to love back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not the way my intuition works. I'm good when I plug in and I'm helping other people
mm-hmm.
and I can read all that for others in relationships and all that. I can get behind the scenes and understand motives and all that. But with myself and people, I just really want to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not everybody wants to share correctly.
Yeah. Well, interesting you should use the word share, because in my book, one of the things I talk about are three levels of conversation. And level three is the place where you're open, trusting, you engage with people, you're open to influence, you want to be honest, transparent. You're actually moving in and out of energy with people and through the prefrontal cortex and the heart, which is the prefrontal cortex is where we have empathy and intuition, which, especially since you're an intuitor, it would make a sense that that's the case for you. And it's where we're open to foresight and thinking big thoughts with people. And we're not in the game to play to win and them to lose, that we're really there for others. And sharing is one of the signs that you're in that state of mind, sharing and discovering with people.
Yes, and it's an innocence that gets me into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I guess I'm glad I have it, because I really like people a lot. But then I get to not like the people who take advantage of that.
Yeah. Yep, and when human beings live in level two, a lot of the time, level two is where we're taking a position about what we want, and we advocate our point of view, and we will inquire and ask questions about what other people are thinking, but a lot of times it's our goal is to move them where we want them to go. And many companies live in level two quite a bit, with a lot of people advocating their points of view, getting into win-lose conversations, and it doesn't feel good, because when that's in excess, we can fall into silos and really bad behaviors that I know I'm like you. I want to live in level three with people. I want to be open and honest and, you know, get straight and make it work for everybody. And it's hard to do that in business. It's very hard to do that in politics.
Sure.
You know, that's where we really see polarities and people very much trying to win and lose. And learning how to move in and out of each of those levels is really what creates the healthiest, most expansive opportunities for everybody, because we have them all hardwired in us. We may choose to be in one. Like, I choose level three more often than not, just like you do. You know, I love being in that place where I can connect with people and,
right.
and you know, see the most and the best in them. But it's not always possible, and I guess, the whole idea of conversational agility, being able to move in and out of different levels.
Well, what I learned about you in your book is that you've worked with a lot of large companies that were failing. And because you taught them how to communicate properly with mm-hmm. each other, you've turned them around.
Mm-hmm.
And some, amazingly so they became leaders in their industry, whereas before they were in the dregs.
And this is what's so exciting for me. I guess, like you, I have a belief. And my belief is that human beings really thrive when we can live in this world where we have trust and honesty and transparency and say what's on our minds. And saying what's on our minds doesn't mean saying, you know, I really hate you. that's not an example of what we're advocating here. But
no, but actually what you're advocating is to draw people out so that you can empathize with them.
Yes.
So if there are things you don't like about people, and then you can find out. And you've done that in companies where you've gone in where people have hated each other, and through communication, you've taught them to actually appreciate each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep. May I mention one
sure.
company in particular?
Sure.
Because I guess I'm excited about this company. I've known the people in the company a long time, and it's a company in Hollywood. They've allowed me to use their name in my book. So. And yesterday, actually, I was mentioning some things about different companies, and this one came up, and someone said to me, oh, my goodness, they are really a successful company in Hollywood now. And I said, yes, let me tell you where they started. And they started in a place where egos were so dominant, where people were concerned about which parking space they got because it signified that they were important in the company. You can imagine the worst-case scenarios of how they were throwing around people's names and making others look bad and themselves look good. That's ego, and that's Hollywood. However, what they chose to do is go on a conversational intelligence journey and really go through some steps to humanize themselves, to move from that place of big ego to a place of really being willing to understand what others in their company had to offer, because collectively their skills and talents were incredible. However, they were living in separate silos. People were not playing with each other. They were not working to support each other. They were not looking at their techniques and ideas for producing films and finishing films and creating animations and films. They weren't combining them in any way.
You're speaking about the large majority of companies in this country,
In
the world.
Yeah, this is the paradigm. That's why this is such a great example. And so I created over a period of time opportunities for them to literally come together and showcase their best talents. In other words, where a lot of people say, let's go outside and look at best practices from outside, I said, let's look at best practices from inside first. This is what I taught at Wharton when I was teaching best practices. And it's reversing it so that we get a sense of pride and we learn about who we are, because right in front of our very eyes could be people with talents that are so incredible. But if we only go outside to look at what's great, we start to minimize what's inside. We lose confidence. So we started from inside. We did a lot of incredible showcasing. People went around and had meetings with other people to see what they were doing and looking at the great films and the great techniques that they were inventing. And pretty soon, there was this cross-fertilization inside the company. And then they took on a shared big challenge. And this is what I love to talk to leaders about, is let's come up with a big company challenge, an enterprise-wide challenge that everybody could focus their attention on. And this was that they wanted to grow their relationship within Hollywood with other companies. They were a spin-out from Disney, and now we wanted to take a look at the six other companies they could work with. And so collectively they took this on as a challenge, collectively worked out how to get meet and greet and get to know what the other companies were, and collectively they started to bring their talents together because now they had a shared interest that everybody could partake in. The short story is that they ended up growing their business so much that they had to buy a new building. The building was created with a lot of open space. People in Hollywood started to come to see why, when you work with these people, they felt so different. And that's the conversational cocktail part that I love about this work. When we show up differently, we feel different in our conversation with others, and that creates a different chemistry inside.
And so that's what you're doing is you're teaching people how to get real with each other,
mm-hmm.
so that they can get behind the ego front,
mm-hmm.
and really see the heart in each other, and purpose and talent in each other, and the meaning in each other that's mutual,
mm-hmm.
and so they can learn to trust each other that way.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is what, of the neuroscience of all the things that I've worked with over the last 20, 30 years, this is the piece that I think people need to understand, and it astounded me when I learned it. Trust lives in the prefrontal cortex heart connection. When we feel somebody's heartbeat, and if we can trust the heartbeat, and this happens at that very, very quick 0.07 seconds, then our brain is opening up like a flower to receive the pollen from another person to be able to be fertilized.
But people have to be willing to expose their weaknesses or their personal fears.
Yep.
And you do that, and you've mentioned that in the book many times, with companies where the fear, the competitive fear, the fear of failure, there's so many fears that play a role in people protecting their turf,
mm-hmm.
that when they come into working with you, they usually come in with a chip on their shoulder.
Right, right. And they're closed down. They're afraid. Where trust lives in the prefrontal cortex and the heart connection, fear lives in the reptilian brain, the lower brain, the amygdala brain. And people are closed down because the chemistry of fear is cortisol. And it literally, it's like it has a lock and key. It closes down that incredible place where integrity, intuition, empathy, strategic thinking lives. That's the prefrontal. It closes it down and throws away the key sometimes. And that's when I step into companies, is when they're in that state of fear and their arms are closed, they're not sharing, they're not getting to know each other.
Yeah, you have some master keys. You help unlock doors that no one else has a key for.
Oh. Well, I want to start reproducing those keys for everybody. When I say, you know, in my book, I've tried to give away as much wisdom as I knew at the time that I was writing it, because I want the world to know that they know this wisdom. When people read the book, they say to me, wow, you've put science to things that I've been feeling and thinking. And
now you bring it to knowing, because when you read your book, then you can't be the same again, because you see it. It's now you know the language of conversational intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see the ways people are acting in life, you can understand that this is what they're doing. They're shielding and defending and creating blocks to progress, and then. The idea then is to learn how, and sometimes it takes the leadership of a company to really break that mold. And a lot of leaders don't want to do that. They're old-fashioned, and they just want to dominate.
Exactly. A lot of leaders are afraid. They're afraid to be vulnerable. They're afraid for people to find out that they don't have all the answers. They have been caught in the imposter syndrome a lot, which is, you know, I fear inside, but I want to look really strong outside so that people will feel good with me around because I'm the leader and I have the answers. And that vision is being dissolved every day, one more day at a time, that where we start to realize much more that it's the human connection that strengthens people. It doesn't weaken people, it strengthens people.
I work with so many people who work in companies who meet people all the time who just can't understand how stupid management is in their company.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, that they make judgments and decisions that don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they're not willing to communicate properly to know what anyone else is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting themselves in position of authority that is blind to understanding where everyone else in their company is coming from.
Exactly. Exactly. And I keep wondering all the time, like, why can't we make this easy for people? You know, why can't we just open up and talk and simplify this and take away the judgment and just let people feel how incredible it is? You know, what I keep wondering all the time, what makes it so hard? Maybe you have the answer.
Well, we know that so many people operate in fear and their own self-esteem, self-worth issues that they don't want to expose.
Mm-hmm.
And so we live in a material world where people use power of the material, whether it be title or money, position, railroad others,
mm-hmm.
and be blind and think it's okay because they still have their money and their title, and it might not last long at the way they're going.
Exactly. So I guess my hope is that with what you're doing in the world and in your show and the kind of things that I'm doing in the world with my books, that we help people see that the world of power over is not the kind of world that we will need to live in order to be successful and really create a global community. And it's power with others makes all the difference in the world, changes the game, and makes it easier for us to discover the greatness that each of us has inside.
The very fact that you and I are talking about this is a light for the future, and your book is a light for the future. Your book is Conversational Intelligence. It's the title of it. And it's so important that we're coming into a time of awakening. That's why we can all feel so annoyed about what isn't intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so apparent to so many people what's not intelligent. So that as we go down the future, as we go into the future, hopefully it'll be more and more apparent to the leaders that they need to be more intelligent.
Mm.
And that something's wrong, and where can they look? Well, they can pick up your book. or hire you to help their company.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an opportunity. And there are a lot of other professionals out there who know what you know. I'm sure you've bumped into a lot of them,
mm-hmm.
and are helping. Because I would hate to feel that you're the only one who understands all this.
No, I guess what I'm finding, which is very exciting, I'm now getting emails from around the world. I have people from Portugal. I have people from Argentina, from South America. They're reaching out and asking for Skype time to talk about ideas they have of how they could take this kind of work inside of the organizations that they're working with. And that makes me put such a smile on my face. It tells me that the book at least is a starting place for people to take a stand like that.
And you have techniques for people to self-inquire, to look at each other, look at themselves. You know, when you go into a company, people actually, you give them things to write about what they feel and what they think, and you know, to answer questions that are self-revealing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get people to reveal themselves to themselves.
Yep. And it's like holding up the mirror and being willing to look in the mirror and see who you are. And the key framework that is behind conversational intelligence is that I assume that every human being has a good intention when they're communicating with another human being. May not always be. I'm like you. I have that belief system, and I'd like it to be true. But the real truth of a good conversation is the impact that we have on another person.
Right. And you're bringing out the best in everyone.
Yep.
Judith Glaser, Glaser. Is there a website?
Yep. It's www.conversationalintelligence.com.
Oh, that's great. Judith, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. I've really enjoyed talking with you. You're doing wonderful work. I'm so excited about knowing more about conversational intelligence.
Anytime you want to talk about it, Peter, I'm here for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at prn.fm. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you. I'm sure that you have a lot of thoughts about this show and maybe other shows you've heard. And thank you so much for listening.